Well, the title of the message this morning is The Chest of Joash. You know, chests are, they're pretty interesting objects. I can remember as a kid growing up, my grandmother had a chest, and it was filled with, quilts, I'm sorry. Those tough words give me trouble sometimes. It was filled with quilts. Well, you know, I didn't find a lot of interest in that, and so I didn't open that chest very often. But she had another chest up in the attic, and in it were stored all kinds of items. My father's Navy uniform was up there. My grandfather's World War I uniform was stored in that chest. And just all sorts of things like that that certainly did hold a little more of the attention of a little fellow. But probably the best chest of all that I was ever familiar with was my dentist's chest. That's when you would go to the dentist's office and you can get through with the cleaning and the exam and all of that stuff. You could go to the chest that he kept, and there were all kinds of little toys that were kept in there. I mean, real treasures, you know, things of some real value. And I always remembered being able to go to that chest. Well, I want to talk to you about a different chest this morning, very important chest. And I think a chest that will certainly hold some valuable lessons for us. It's the chest of Joash. Now, Joash was quite a remarkable man, quite a remarkable child as well. Joash's brothers were all killed by a woman named Adaliah, who usurped the throne of Judah. But Joash was preserved through that. He was saved by good people who took him to Jehoiada the priest. And Jehoiada kept Joash hidden in the temple for 6 years. And then when he was 7 years old, Jehoiada led basically a revolt against Adaliah and removed her from the throne and placed the rightful king on the throne. And that was Joash. And he was but 7 years old when he was ascended to the throne. The Bible tells us, and the text we'll be reading in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, as well as in 2 Kings chapter 12, that Joash ruled for 40 years. So he lived to be 47 years old. And for four decades he ruled over the people of Judah, and he was a good king. He was a good man. And the text we're going to look at is a text that tells us of one of the events in the life of Joash, and it surrounds his use of this chest. And as I said, I hope that there will be some worthwhile lessons for us that we can draw from this story about the chest of Joash. I'd like for you to begin reading with me, if you would, please, in 2 Chronicles chapter 24. Beginning in verse 1, Joash was 7 years old when he became king, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Zibiah from Beersheba. And Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. And Jehoiada took two wives for him, and he became the father of sons and daughters. Now it came about after this that Joash decided to restore the house of the Lord. And he gathered the priests and Levites and said to them, "Go out to the cities of Judah and collect money from all Israel to repair the house of your God annually, and you shall do the matter quickly." But the Levites did not act quickly. So the king summoned Jehoiada, the chief priest, and said to him, "Why have you not required the Levites to bring in from Judah and from Jerusalem the levy fixed by Moses the servant of the Lord on the congregation of Israel for the tent of the testimony. For the sons of the wicked, Adaliah, had broken into the house of God and even used the holy things of the house of the Lord for the Baals. So the king commanded, and they made a chest and set it outside the gate of the house of the Lord. And they made a proclamation in Judah and Jerusalem to bring to the Lord the levy fixed by Moses, the servant of God, on Israel in the wilderness. All the officers, all the people rejoiced and brought in their levies and dropped them into the chest until they had finished. And it came about whenever the chest was brought in to the king's officers by the Levites, and when they saw that there was much money, then the king's scribe and the chief priest's officer would come, empty the chest, take it, and return it to its place. Thus they did daily and collected much money. And the king and Jehoiada gave it to those who did the work of the service of the house of the Lord. And they hired masons and carpenters to restore the house of the Lord, and also workers in iron and bronze to repair the house of the Lord. So the workmen labored, and the repair work progressed in their hands, and they restored the house of God according to the specifications and strengthened it. When they had finished, they brought the rest of the money before the king and Jehoiada, and it was made into utensils for the house of the Lord, utensils for the service and the burnt offering, and pans and utensils of gold and silver. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. Well, this is quite a remarkable story on many fronts. It's a great story about restoration and about how people can return to doing things in the ways of the Lord after they have strayed from those ways for a period of time. But it's also a great lesson, I hope that we'll see, in the person of this young boy who grew to a king and who demonstrated personal qualities that I hope that we'll find to be worthwhile and worth imitation. The first thing that I want you to notice with me in these verses is what they say about the king's determination. We see that, as I said, he was but a young boy when he became king. Actually, when you read in 2 Kings chapter 12 and the record there of these events, we're told that it was in the 23rd year of Joash that he did these things. And I would take that to mean in the 23rd year of his reign. So he's about 30 years old when he institutes these policies surrounding this chest that he placed out to be used in the collection of money. But I want you to notice what this text says about Joash. First of all, it says that God can use young people. God can use young people to his purposes. Here's this young boy, 7 years old, and I would grant you that probably in his reign, in those childhood years, that he had he had direction. Most directly, it came from Jehoiada the priest. Again, in 2 Kings chapter 12, you can read where it is said that he was instructed, that is, Joash was instructed by Jehoiada. And what a great lesson that is, that if we want our children to grow up, to be used by God, and to achieve the purposes of God, they're going to need to be taught in those things. We go back to the book of Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, where God directs the people of Israel to instruct their children when they rise up and when they lie down, to instruct their children, to teach them. That's the principal responsibility of the parents, is to teach their children and to teach their children the ways of God. Paul's admonition to raise up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord in Ephesians, the 6th chapter. That's your job as a parent. Now, supportive of that can be the efforts and the help of other people. Well, you know, we have Bible classes here. In case you didn't know that, we have Bible classes here. And members of this congregation teach those classes, and those teachings and those instructions can be supportive to what you as a parent are doing. You know, it's amazing to me sometimes that that parents seem, or sometimes they seem, not to appreciate the fact that the Bible classes are the one thing we do here, the one thing we do when we come together that is specifically designed for your children, whatever ages they may be. They're specifically designed for your children. I mean, we come out here and the preacher gets up and he talks for a while. The kid, you know, I mean, that in a lot of ways, that's really not designed for the kids, particularly the younger ones. But the Bible classes are. And what a shame it is when parents don't take advantage of that. Or when parents routinely are bringing their kids into those classes 10, 15, 20 minutes late. You know, class is halfway over. Jehoiada, the priest, understood the great value in teaching this young boy, Joash, things regarding the ways of the Lord, because God was going to use this boy, particularly when he became a man. Now, I want you to think with me about what was produced by the instruction of Jehoiada. It produced a man who was determined to do what's right. You look in verse 2 as we read it there, Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord. I want to encourage you, whatever age you may be, I want to encourage you to do what is right. The auditorium class out studying from the book of Isaiah. And there's a great statement in the book of Isaiah, chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, where the prophet, speaking to his people, tells them, cease to do good, learn to do, or I'm sorry, cease, don't listen to that. Cease to do evil, learn to do good. Now, a lot of times we'll look at things that are just simply and succinctly stated and think, well, you know, that's so simple, it's so succinct that it really can't be of any great significance. But I want to tell you, that's significant. That's a significant pattern, if you will, for how to get right in the eyes of God. And it's just this simple. If you're doing what's wrong, you need to quit it. You need to stop it. But the job is only halfway done if you'll stop doing what is evil. You need to learn to do what is good. And the thing that we ought to appreciate about this young man, Joash, is that he was a man who was determined to do what is right. William Penn, the great American colonial leader, said this, right is right, even if everyone is against it. And wrong is wrong, even if everyone is for it. Now, there was a lot of wrong, it would seem, that was going on in the time when Joash was just a young boy, and the deeds of this woman, Adaliah, led the people of Judah in the wrong direction. The house of the Lord fell into disrepair. The doing of what was wrong was approved, apparently, by a lot of folks. And when Joash came to the throne, he was determined, wrong being wrong, he was not going to follow it. And right being right, he was going to follow that. And he was going to do that. Now you need to, and I need to make up our minds that what I'm going to do is to do what is right. Daniel, what a great example he was of this. Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart not to defile himself. That just means Daniel was determined. He had decided, if there is something that's going to defile me before my God, I'm not going to do it. No matter how inconvenient it became, no matter how unpopular it might be, and it did indeed put him at some degree of risk. But he was determined, he had decided that he was not going to defile himself. Now Joash seems to be a man of similar character. Joash determined to repair the house of the Lord, that is, the temple. It was in disrepair in those days since Adaliah. Doing right had not been popular. And it was still not going to be particularly popular. But Joash was determined to do it. And another quality that went right along with the doing of what is right is the doing of what is right with some urgency. It needed to be done. Look at verse 5. He gathered the priests, the Levites, and said to them, go out to the cities of Judah, collect money from all of Israel to repair the house of God annually, and you shall do the matter quickly. How easy is it for us to sit around and think, yeah, we need to do what's right. It's important that we do what's right. And I'm going to get to it one of these days. You've probably seen one of a picture, or maybe even they used to put out a little wooden disc that had the words printed on it, round to it. And when someone would say, well, I'll do that one, you know, as soon as I get around to it, and you hand them one of those discs and said, okay, now you've got one, around to it. The point being, there's some things that just demand urgency. They demand that they need to be addressed with some sense of urgency. And that's exactly what Joash appreciated and what he understood, that doing right required some degree of urgency. It needed to be done now. And if you're going to do what's right, if you've determined that that's what you're going to do in your life, then you need to be in a hurry about it. And I need to be in a hurry about doing what is right. And when we confront an obstacle, and by the way, you will. When we confront an obstacle, we'll need to be persistent in the doing of what is right with some urgency. Look in verse 6. So the king summoned Jehoiada, the chief priest, said to him, why have you not required the Levites to bring in from Judah and from Jerusalem the levy fixed by Moses, the servant of the Lord, and the congregation of Israel for the tent of the testimony? Back in Exodus chapter 30, in the days when the nation was in the wilderness wandering, God had directed through Moses that the people of Israel, everyone 20 years of age and older, everyone would bring a half shekel. And that was the levy, a tax of sorts, if you will. Half a shekel from each one. And it was dedicated to the purpose of the repair and the maintenance of the tabernacle. And that, of course, would later become the temple. And that's what Joash was dealing with, the temple. And you see this sense of persistence demonstrated. If this is really an urgent matter, then we need to be persistent about doing it, is what Joash was saying. And what a great lesson that is for us. If serving the Lord, if doing the things that the Lord has directed, in the way that the Lord has directed, is an urgent matter. If that's the way to do what's right, and it's urgent that we do what is right, then we need to be persistent about it. Even when we face opposition, even if you face criticism for it, you need to be persistent in it. Joash wanted to know from Jehoiada, why hasn't this been done as it was directed to be done? We see this in the New Testament over and over again. People who were persistent in the urgency of doing what is right. I think of the Apostle Paul, recorded in the book of Acts, and his preaching trip through Iconium and Lystra and Derbe. You remember, he faced obstacles. At one point, they took him out of the city and they stoned him. They thought they had killed him. And he got up And he went right on preaching. Not only that, the man turned around and went right back through those same towns, continuing to preach. I think about the example of the Apostle Peter and the other apostles, and they're in Jerusalem. You remember the council brought them in and charged them no longer to preach in the name of Jesus. And then in the very next chapter, we read the council brings them back in and says, we charged you not to preach in the name of Jesus, and you filled the city. You filled all of Jerusalem with his name. Those were men who had persisted in the face of opposition. Jesus' own direction to his disciples in John the 9th chapter in the 4th verse was that we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, for the night comes when no man will work. You want to know why it's important to be persistent about the things that are urgent? It's because time's running out, folks. Time is coming to an end when we're not going to have the opportunity to do this work any longer. Now, Joash is a great example of determination. But I want you to notice and appreciate as well, not only the king's determination, but the people's demonstration. Verse 9 describes that they made a proclamation in Judah and Jerusalem to bring to the Lord the levy fixed by Moses, the servant of God, on Israel in the wilderness. It's a marvelous demonstration by the people. These were good people. They were generous people. And they were giving people. They were willing to bring what had been prescribed, this half shekel. Their giving, I would point out to you, was to an identified need. The temple's repair. I've thought about this, and I think I'm correct in saying this. You correct me if I'm not. But I don't know of any Old Testament or New Testament example of giving that wasn't to an identified need. Every instance we see where some need, some quote-unquote, some project was identified as needing to be addressed, and God's people would then give for that purpose. It was never a matter of, well, we've been assigned the responsibility to give. And I think sometimes, I know for David it has been at times, but I think sometimes we think, you know, in the teachings of the New Testament about giving on the first day of the week, that, well, we give on the first day of the week because it's the first day of the week. No. We give because there are particular needs that must be met. Now, the giving for those needs is on the first day of the week. But it's not a matter of giving just because it's the first day of the week, as though we're paying dues of some sort. These people were generous people, and they were happy to give. And that's not always the case. And you know of Paul's instructions in 2 Corinthians that those Christians that were giving for an identified need, the identified need was that there was a famine in Jerusalem or in Judea, and they were giving for the relief of those saints. Now, they were told that they ought not to give grudgingly, but they ought to give cheerfully. And that seems to be the case with these people in the days of Joash, that they were willing, they were voluntarily giving that which was needed for the repairs of the house. Now, and as I say, people are not always like that. Well, sometimes people are more like the story about the preacher that was up preaching, and he was preaching about giving on that particular day. And he said, now, brethren, the church needs to crawl. And there's a fellow sitting in the back of the building. Oh, let her crawl, preacher, let her crawl. He said, now, brethren, if the church crawls, then the church is going to need to walk. Oh, let her walk. preacher, let her walk. And if the church is going to walk, the church needs to run. Well, let her run, preacher, let her run. And if the church is going to run, the church needs to fly. Well, let her fly, preacher. Let her fly. He said, now, brethren, if the church is going to fly, it's going to need money. Fell in the back. Let her crawl, preacher, let her crawl. You know, sometimes we just, we're not as inclined to let loose of some of those things that we possess. But the people's demonstration here in the days of Joash, because of his leadership, was great. Now, he put that chest out there where those folks could come. As they came into the temple, they could come in and they could put their money, that half shekel, they could put that into this chest. We don't give just for the purpose of amassing some kind of surplus. As a matter of fact, in 2 Kings chapter 12 and verse 7, we see that what Joash did when he saw that the priests were not gathering these funds in like he had instructed them to do, when when this ceased to be the case or proved to be the case, he suspended the whole project until he put that chest out so the people could bring the money in. The people's demonstration was that of a generous people. Well, final thing I want you to think about with me is this, and that is, this story also tells of the house of the Lord's decoration in verses 12 through 14. It's adornment. The way in which these monies were used, even to the point that once all of the repairs were done, everything was finished, and there was still money left over, they took that money and they melted it down. They took those coins and they melted them down and they fashioned them into the various kinds of utensils that could be used in the service at the temple. That was the adornment of the house of the Lord in the days of Joash. You know, it's interesting to me, Titus chapter 2, verse 10, talks some about the adornment of the house of the Lord today. I've told you in the past, you know, in the Old Testament, God had a temple for his people. And in the New Testament, God has a people for his temple. The church is the temple of the Lord today. The people are the temple of the Lord. And part of the instruction that's given here in verse 10 of Titus chapter 2 is that Paul says that the people ought not to be pilfering, but showing all good faith that they may adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in every respect. The conduct of your life is the manner in which you adorn the temple of the Lord today. As I said, a lot of times folks are just unwilling to part with some of their goods. There's an older couple that determined that they were going to give a special way, they were going to give some money to their church. And so they took this great big jar that they had for years been putting $1 bills into, and they were going to give that, and they took that down to the church building, and they took it to the preacher, and they said, "Preacher, we have 12,000 $1 bills in this jar. We want to give." Well, he said, "You know, are you sure you can afford this? I mean, are you sure that you can do this?" "Oh yeah, it'll be a sacrifice for us, but we can do it. And we want to do it." So then they began, the fellow began to count out the money, count out the dollar bills. He counted out, and he counted 11,999. And that was it. He scratched his head and he said, "I know, I counted it this morning before I came down here. I knew there was $12,000 in there. Let me count them again." So he counted them out again. They got 11,998, 11,999. And that was it. He says, I just don't understand. I know that I counted out. And his wife said, oh, honey, I know what it is. We brought the wrong jar. Now, a lot of times, you know, we may want to give the impression, or we may want to think that, well, I'm just not able. Let me ask you, young people, are you giving? Are you giving to the Lord? Now, probably when you were a little child, your parents probably gave you a quarter or something to put in the plate as it was passed by. But you've grown now. You've grown now to a more mature age. You're kind of like Joash. His story started out when he was a 7-year-old kid sitting on the throne. But by the time he came a 30-year-old man, he was prepared to do some things that needed to be done for the Lord. Well, you've grown to a level of adulthood. Is it your practice to give to the Lord? From what you're able to give? In accord with what the New Testament teaches about giving according to your prosperity? You may be thinking, well, I'll do those things, you know, when I get older, when I get started in my business career and, you know, things are going better for me and I just can't do it right now. Well, you know, in all likelihood, what you'll do in years to come, what you're doing now. We set those patterns. We set those priorities in our lives when we're young. And they tend to stick with us as we get older. Joash's great lesson to us of determination to do what's right. The people are a great lesson to us about their generosity and the demonstration of that generosity. And we would do well at whatever stage in life we find ourselves to imitate that as we endeavor to adorn the house of the Lord in our day. As I said to you a few moments ago, the house of the Lord today is not a physical building. It's not this building that we're in. The house of the Lord is the people. It's the church of the Lord. That's the temple of God today. And my question to you is, are you a part of it? The Bible, the New Testament, the Apostle Peter speaks of that temple, that spiritual temple, as a building that is constructed out of individual living bricks. Individual living members make up that temple. Are you part of that construction? Are you part of that spiritual building? If you're not a Christian, why don't you become one? Why don't you make yourself a part of that spiritual building of God that exists today? If you've been a Christian, but you've not lived in the ways that are right, think about Joash. What needs to happen? The first thing that needs to happen is you need to decide whether or not you're going to do what's right. Be urgent about the doing of what is right and be persistent in it. Won't you do that while we stand and sing together?